Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Hello, this is Joshua Kane at the Midwest Genealogy Center on Saturday, September 22nd, and I am with...
Michael White.
And could you give us a brief a little introduction about yourself?
I'm from Independence. I grew up in Blue Springs. I graduated from Blue Springs High School in 1982. And soon after high school, I went in the service in the Army.
Okay.
I've always had plans to join the service as a kid and just follow my father's footsteps.
Okay.
He served in between Korea and Vietnam.
Oh, all right. And was he also in the Army? Or
yeah, he was in the Army. He served from 58 to 62.
Okay. Oh, all right. Good.
But it was something I would do all over again if I had to. I wouldn't think twice about it.
Okay. All right. And so you said you served in the military and you were in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get drafted or did you sign up?
I signed up.
You
I volunteered.
Up. Okay. And that was, you said, right after high school?
Yeah.
Okay. Were there any other motivations besides, like, because you said your father had done it. Was there anything else, like another calling or something?
I just wanted to serve my country.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Did you fight in a war at all?
Desert Storm.
Okay. Back in
1990, 1991.
Oh, okay.
I served the 101st Airborne Division.
Okay.
81st Maintenance Battalion, Delta Company.
Okay.
And I arrived in country 10 days after Iraq invaded Kuwait. Okay. And I left Saudi Arabia in May of 1991.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Could you, if you can, maybe elaborate on your experience or any experiences or memories you'd like to share about your time, either in the military or over in Iraq? Or
My first went in the military, I went to basic training in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Okay.
Down to basic. After that, I transitioned to AIT, Advanced Individualized Training, at Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland. I spent 6 months in school learning my trade, which at that time was diesel mechanic.
Okay.
From there, I went to Germany. I went to a station in Mannheim, Germany, a 512th Maintenance Company, 51st Maintenance Battalion.
Okay.
I was in Germany from 83 to 87.
Mm-hmm.
There, I re-enlisted, and I wanted to go airborne, so I went to jump school at Fort Benning, Georgia. Then from there, I went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, where I was stationed at the 101st Airborne Division.
Okay. Excellent. And what was your time in Germany like?
I loved it.
Yeah?
Beautiful country. I miss it. Got to see a lot of Europe. I got to see a lot of the history from World War II.
Okay.
One thing that I did got to see and see a few things. One of the things that touched my heart and it was very sad to see was I got to visit one of the concentration camps.
Okay.
Visit Dachau.
Dachau. Okay.
And it was one of the most brutal in Germany, but it was a reminder of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the tragedy that had happened during World War II,
yes.
with the extermination of the Jews and everything else. It was really sad to walk through the footsteps that they went through. It was a one-way trip for them.
Yes.
And once they were liberated, it was changing of their lives and changing of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you stayed in Germany from 83 to 87?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
So that was before the wall came down.
Yeah.
So what was that kind of, I'm just curious, like the tension, did you feel tension?
There was tension.
To East Germany?
I've been to Berlin. I went there once. Took a trip there.
Right.
USO trip.
Okay. And that was during your 82?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I spent 4 days in Berlin.
Okay.
And just went on the USO trip. Tension was high, then it was east and west, and I did what we called a morale trip. We went to the Fulda Gap in Germany, and the Fulda Gap is where they expected the Russians to come through an invasion.
Okay.
And we had military stationed there, and it's just a big open area and wooded area, and some of the areas of the border is not marked, just by maybe a post.
Okay.
And it says east and west in both English and German.
Right.
And there we went to, they have little villages around on the border that are absent, but the Germans bus in people to make it look like they're living there.
Okay.
And while we were there, they had bussed in a group of people, and they went into the houses and fired up the fireplaces and saw smoke come from the chimneys to make it look like it was inhabited, but actually it wasn't. It was just, it was like to make us think people were living there.
Right, a little kind of propaganda play.
That's what it was, propaganda.
Yeah.
There was small bunkers all around the area, in the woods, in the open fields. Every once in a while, you see a head pop up with binoculars. It was East Germans watching us, and we were watching them.
Oh, right.
A friend of mine was on guard during the during that time, and several times you pass your enemy, and you're within inches of your enemy, and there'd be no fence there, and you know it's an invisible line.
Right.
And they don't have the freedoms that we had. They were, of course, they were communism. He had a Coca-Cola in his hand. He opened it up and poured it on the ground in front of these Germans, and the German soldier cried because he had never had one before in his life.
Wow.
And being that close to your enemy and knowing that's the person you're going to be fighting is an eye-opener.
I bet, yeah.
It's an eye-opener.
Right. And did you take those, were you on those patrol rocks? Or was
no, I didn't go on, I just went there. This is on a trip.
Right.
My unit went there. We had some time off, so we took a bus out there to the border and got to see... look into East and West Germany, and right. you just literally just look into it.
And just didn't see what it was like.
Yeah, and we knew if war would break out, that's where we'd be heading.
Right, yeah. Have you been back since to Berlin or Germany?
No. I haven't been back since. I'd love to go back, but I just haven't been able to, have the time or the money to go.
Yeah, it's a decent track. Yeah. It's a decent track. Excellent. And so you were in Germany until 87, mm-hmm. and then after that you came back to the States to do airborne training.
I went to airborne school at Fort Bend in Georgia.
And could you? What was that like compared to like basic or to the other?
It was 3 weeks. Training? 3 weeks of intense training, and you do 5 jumps day and night, and just learned basic skills of airborne. Then graduated there. Then I proceeded my next duty assignment, which was Fort Campbell, Kentucky, 101st Airborne Division.
Okay, and you were there until. The Iraqi war broke out?
I was there until Desert Storm, until after Desert Storm.
Right. Okay.
While I was stationed at Fort Campbell, I was with the 801st Maintenance Battalion, as worked as a mechanic. Also cross-trained as a medic, too, while I was in service. So I was able to do both fields.
Okay.
And during Desert Storm, I got assigned temporarily to a medic camp, POW camp, and we treated POWs.
Okay.
Iraqi POWs.
Okay, so that was your prime. Was that your primary duty then?
That wasn't my primary duty then. Right. They were needing additional medics to help out, and I volunteered to go.
Okay.
To help with that.
Okay.
So that was an eye-opening experience myself.
Right. Okay. And then, so is that what brought you to Iraq, or were you in Iraq serving in the Navy?
I was already in Iraq at the
right.
time.
Right. Okay. And then what was your duty before working at the POW camp?
I was just as a mechanic.
Okay. So what were you working on?
Vehicles.
Okay.
Our unit vehicles or vehicles from other units come in, break down, or they need maintenance and stuff. They bring them back to our maintenance area.
Okay.
You get them fixed up and send them back out again.
All right. What kind of vehicles were they? Tanks, trucks?
Tanks, trucks, Jeeps. Not Jeeps, but Humvees.
Okay.
That's when Humvees first started coming out.
Right. Okay.
Just basic maintenance, move engines, change engines, down transmissions, or just repairs. We have body shops there did body work for vehicles that were damaged in accidents or something like that.
Okay.
I was a Fort Campbell. I got to be an aerosol. I was an aerosol school instructor for 2.5 years.
Okay.
So I taught aerosol and repelling. You learn about 6 months of training in 10 days. It's one of the hardest schools in the military.
It's intense, yeah.
It's intense training, and it's something I would do again.
Yeah. Okay. Why would you do it again? Was it just interesting?
The camaraderie, the intensity.
Okay.
And the brotherhood.
Okay.
And I wanted to be part of the 101st Airborne Division because they're one of the most elite and the best.
Right.
And I want to be part of that. I want to be a part of that brotherhood.
Right. The 101st Airborne, that sounds familiar a bit to me.
They're Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Right. Is there, do you know a little of the history of that?
Yeah, they first started during World War II, started in Claiborne, Claiborne, Georgia, when they first started their training. And from there, they went to England.
Okay.
In preparation for Normandy.
Right.
Okay. They had 2 years of training, then they were some of the first ones to jump into Normandy.
Okay.
When Normandy happened.
Right.
They were flying into such intense fire that the planes were flying twice as fast and twice as high than it should have been. So a lot of the paratroopers when they jumped, they lost all their gear. They were scattered all over Normandy.
Okay.
And so they had to come back to certain areas to their contact locations.
Right.
To regroup. And a lot of them were killed during the jumps. A lot of them were shot. A lot of them didn't make the landings. The land of no gear. Some had no weapons because the weapons got, they lost the weapons in the
jungle. Right, they just took,
they didn't have any gear, so they had to scrounge and find out what they had. Once they gathered up, the 101st traveled all through Europe during World War II, Operation Market Garden in Holland, the Argonne Forest in Belgium.
Okay.
And then from there, they went into Germany.
To Berlin or just...
No, they made it to Berlin. We went down to Munich.
Okay.
And the 101st ended up, their last place was just inside Austria.
Okay.
But the 101st Airborne Division were the ones that captured the Eagle's Nest. It was Hitler's main headquarters.
That's right, in Austria.
His palace there in Munich.
So a lot of history involved with the 101st Airborne. Now, most people at Magic Con, you think of like Airborne, you think of like Air Force. But this is part of the Army.
Yeah. Okay. During World War II, Airborne was parachuting, paratrooping.
Right.
But now, Fort Campbell 101st Air Assault is repelling. You repel from helicopters.
Okay.
Repel, average about 90 feet.
Okay.
Plus, you learn sling load operations where you hook up vehicles and equipment to be lifted off by helicopters, Blackhawks or Chinooks.
Okay.
And they can fly vehicles, 2.5-ton vehicles out.
That's
and artillery pieces or fly equipment out.
Okay.
And they just come in, hook them up with the sling load cables, and take off and just fly out with them.
Okay.
And take them where they need to go.
Easy transportation.
Yeah.
And then, so you were part of the repelling thing. Did you do any jumps as well?
I did jumps. I had 70 jumps when I was in the service, and I had over 2,000 repels.
Okay. So they still train you for both jumping and repelling?
Yeah. I jumped as much as I could, and I repelled as often as I could.
Okay. Which one is more fun, if I may ask? Which one do you think was a bit more, I guess, kind of like extreme sport aspect of it?
It's a difference because when you're jumping, you have anywhere between 60 and 90 seconds to hit the ground.
Okay.
When you're repelling, it's in seconds.
Okay.
Because the Black Hawk can hold on average, MD Black Hawk can hold on average 21, 22 soldiers.
Right.
And you can have all the soldiers out on the ground within a matter of seconds.
That's pretty fast.
We'll draw four ropes and out they go.
Right. Okay. So very different
kind of rounds. Yeah, it's very different procedure. I consider both of them safe because you have control.
Okay.
But accidents do happen.
Right.
I've been hurt doing it, but it didn't stop me.
Right. What accidents did you suffer, if you don't mind?
Hip injury, ankle injuries.
Okay. Was that from, I'm assuming, the landing?
Landings or just, had a tree landing one time. Hurt my hip real bad. A hard landing or a turn my ankle or something like that, or hit a hole, land in a hole or land ditch or something like that.
Right, okay. But when you say tree landing, did you hit a tree on the way down? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we do night jumps and put the wrong drop zone and land some trees. Right. Seven of us did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Was there anybody else in your, would it be a battalion or a platoon?
What would that be? It was we call them shocks. They're groups of soldiers.
Okay.
That you fly with or you jump with.
Okay, so within your shock, was there any other, like, damages or injuries that people...
Some of us had a couple of scrapes. I had dislocated my hip.
Okay.
When I hit a branch.
Nothing serious, though. Good. That's good to hear.
But it didn't stop me. Once I got healed up, I was back doing it again.
Love what you do. That's good. When you were in Iraq, what was your first primary duty for the POW? You said you were doing mechanics and diesel stuff.
I was doing mechanics and basically treating POWs. A lot of them was malnutrition.
Okay.
And we just treated malnutrition. Give them fluids, food, just take care of them and just treat them for health injuries or check them for health before we ship them off to wherever they needed to go.
Okay. And then were these Iraqi soldiers, were they defectors or were they captured?
No, they were captured. A lot of them surrendered. A lot of them surrendered.
Okay.
We had them surrender by the thousands.
Okay.
And the way they drafted over in Iraq before Desert Storm, they just grabbed the guys off the street, throw them in the truck. And that's where they were drafted.
That's how they drafted.
That's how they drafted.
Soldiers.
So the ones that fell on the front lines were not trained. They weren't equipped. A lot of them didn't have weapons. If they did have weapons, they didn't work very well. And the more further in we got, the more POWs and people surrendered, Iraqis surrendered.
Okay.
At the point, they were having Iraqi surrender to reporters that were embedded with the troops.
Wow.
They were surrendered to helicopters flying in, and about thousands of them. They're done.
Makes sense. I mean, you know, grabbing from the streets, they didn't want to be there. Right.
But okay. Desert Storm, the ground war, the air war started January 17th, 1991, and the ground war started February I want to say 20th, I think.
Okay.
And then 24th, February 24th and 28th.
Okay.
Because it lasted just 100 hours, the Grand War did.
Right. Yeah, it was a quick, mm-hmm. I remember it was being a quick war, right. And you were there for, how long you said, were you there when the air war started or were you there?
I was there before when it first started arriving in country in September of August of 1990.
Okay.
And I was there through the duration of the air and ground campaign.
Okay. And so you finished off
until I came home.
All the ships came home and everything. Okay. All right. What was the, I guess you could give us a little bit about like the feelings and like the general atmosphere when you first arrived in August 1990.
It was hot. When we landed in country, it was about 130 degrees in the shade.
And this was in Saudi Arabia or Kuwait?
Saudi Arabia.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. We left the United States. I remember temperatures being in the 50s.
Okay, yeah.
And I had been in the desert several times from training, been to Fort Irwin, California, and the Mojave Desert, and just training. And before we left to go to Saudi Arabia, I gave a lot of desert classes for desert survival.
Okay.
And I told the guys that bring your cold weather gear, it gets cold in the desert. Because if it's 140 at night or during the day, it's at 90 at night, that's a 50 degree difference. That's like 50 degrees and zero.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to get cold. It gets cold in the desert, and it does.
Yes.
We have water bottles freezing.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because in December and January and February in Iraq or in Iraq and Saudi Arabia, temperatures dropped down in the 30s, and we had our water bottles are freezing.
Wow.
Yeah, we had guys that weren't prepared. They didn't bring their gear, and I was smart. I told them, bring it. Yeah. I don't want to hear it.
It's not something you think about. You think desert, you think hot, but then that you said the temperature degree and the sun goes down.
Yeah, it takes about 30 days to acclimate to the weather, but once you get acclimated, just stay hydrated.
Yeah,
just drink a lot of water.
Right. What was the general feeling? I guess like with you and like your other people in the military that when you first
arrived, we were there to do a job.
Right. Okay.
We were there to do a job.
Right.
Liberate Kuwait. That was our main objective.
And then was that when you finished when like everything was done with the war and everything like that? What was the feeling like? Was it like did you feel like good, like job accomplished, time to go home?
Feeling accomplished, just tired, ready to get back home, be with my family.
Yeah.
I had a daughter that was 2 years old.
Okay.
And missed a lot of things with her birthdays, Christmases, and stuff like that.
Right.
And it was really hard being away from families.
Right.
Especially during the holidays and birthdays and stuff like that. Especially if you have young kids. I had a friend of mine that had just got married and his girlfriend was pregnant. When he left, when he came back home, he had a 6-month-old daughter. She was born while he was over there.
Right. Yeah.
So he got at that time we didn't have digital technology like we have now.
No, yeah.
So we communicated with pictures or phone calls or stuff like that or video set recorders.
Right. How was communication between when you were in Iraq and like back with home and family and friends and stuff?
We had phone centers set up.
Okay.
It took a couple months before we get them set up, but we can go when we can if we had time make phone calls and stuff, make a few minute phone calls and talk to family and friends.
Right. So like a quick little hello, little update and stuff.
Yeah.
Was it very, I don't want to say like censored, but like did you have to be careful of information?
Yes, you couldn't say where we were at, couldn't say what we were doing because it was very censored because who knows what was on the other end.
Yeah, basic information. You're doing well.
Okay. Operational OPSEC, operational security.
Right, okay, excellent. What was it like coming home, like actually back to the States after serving in a Desert Storm?
It was different because I got now, because I've been in the Army for so long, it was hard. I had a hard time adjusting to civilian life.
Okay, did you finish your service after the Desert Storm?
I got out about 30 days after.
Okay.
I was supposed to go to Korea, and I wanted back my job. My wife was from Germany.
Okay.
And so I was wanting to go back to Germany, so she'd back to see her family. So I had orders for Korea, and I didn't want. I just spent 8 months in Saudi Arabia, and they want to send me to Korea for 13 months.
Right.
So I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to go to Korea, so I got out.
You just finished. Okay. Yeah. Did you just not re-enlist then?
Yeah.
Was your time just up?
Yeah. I just went ahead and just discharged out. Honorable discharge.
All right. What was I guess if you could talk about like coming back, like being back in America and like how America was like towards the troops and towards like, did you get a sense of like welcoming?
Is much different than it was with Vietnam veterans. Vietnam veterans didn't have that. They were treated like dirt when they came home. They were disrespected. We were welcome home with open arms. I talked to a lot of Vietnam veterans, and when we came home and the welcoming that they got gave them a lot of closure.
Good.
From the time they came home back in the 60s, they were treated like dirt.
Yeah.
And times had changed. When we came home, we were welcome home with open arms.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have any experience with that? Did you like experience any of that sort of stuff?
When I came home, I came back to Blue Springs, and it was about the time they were getting ready to have their, I think, Fall Fun Fest or something like that.
Okay.
And they were having a parade, and ones that came back to Blue Springs that served at a storm that we were invited to walk in the parade, so I participated in that.
Oh, all right. Did you know anybody, like any friends or relatives?
Yeah,
or like
I knew
Blue Springs
several.
Served as
there's
well.
A few that I went to high school with that served in Dead of Storm.
Okay.
I didn't know until afterwards.
Right, right.
But because there was over 500,000 American soldiers over there.
It's quite a lot, yeah.
And but yeah, there were several from Blue Springs that went.
Okay. That's good. Do you keep in touch with those?
A few of them.
Yeah.
A few of them do. I kind of drift apart over the years.
Yeah.
My first sergeant I served with at Fort Campbell, First Sergeant Earl Murray, best first sergeant I ever served with. I'd follow him anywhere in the world. He was my first sergeant at Fort Campbell and during Desert Storm. He took care of his troops. He took care of his enlisted soldiers. And we had talked, and I had forgotten that he was from Independence, Missouri.
Oh, okay.
And about 7 or 8 years ago, I was working. Or actually, probably about 20 years ago, I was working at Washington Auto, and I was at the counter doing paperwork, and I hear his voice, and I just got chills down my spine. I look up, it was my first sergeant
there he is.
I served with. I haven't seen him since I've been out of service, and we've been staying in touch ever since. He lives just 10 minutes from me now.
Oh, right on, yeah. And how long was the gap between when you last saw him again?
About 7 years.
7 years, yeah. Okay. So that was probably late 90s by the time
late 90s, yeah. He had retired from the military, and I've already been out for a while, and doing the civilian thing, and then he walks in, and just out of the blue, it's just him.
There you go. Yeah, and but, you guys kept in touch.
Oh yeah, we're close. Yeah. He's like a father to me.
That's great. That's great.
His wife and his mother are my parents to me. Just love them to death.
That's great. That's really good. When did you keep in touch with anybody else from that time, or is he kind of the main?
I kept in touch mainly him mostly. Then when Facebook came around, I started getting in touch with other people. Researching other friends I served with, and I've gotten in touch with a few that's up in New York and down to Tennessee.
All right,
I stay in touch with.
That's good, yeah, very useful. Mm-hmm. That Facebook friend, that stuff, yeah. Excellent. Let's see what else is here. Are you active with any military groups since you've kind of retired?
No, not really. I've been kind of thinking about joining either VFW or American Legion, but I just haven't made that choice yet.
Okay.
I want to join.
Right. Okay.
But I'm 100% disabled veteran. I all my medical's taken care of at the VA, so I don't have to worry about anything.
That's good.
I'm retired now, due to my health, and I've been retired for 13, 14 years now.
Okay. All right. If you don't mind talking, how did you transition back into civilian life? You said it was a bit kind of difficult and rocky at first for you. What did you do?
It's kind of hard to say. As being under such, because everything is so lax,
right,
in the civilian world.
Not as structured.
Not as structured.
You're right.
And I'm used to. I got hired on as a manager at Western Auto, and when I got there, I told something to do. I expect them to do it.
Right.
Then jump and do it, and had problems with people. No, I ain't doing that. Well, yes, you are.
Yeah.
And I did things the military way, and
right,
people didn't like that, didn't understand that, because they couldn't understand where I was coming from. That's where most of my life was, in the military. And I still do things the military way.
Right.
It's just the way I was trained.
Yeah, and that's just something that sunk in.
Yeah, it just became a way of life for me.
Right, yeah. And you were in the military for almost 10 years, or though?
12.
12 years, okay. So, yeah, that, I would imagine that would... can't quite shake that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, being that long and being that type of environment, you're trained a certain way, you do things a certain way, everything is by the book, step by step.
Right.
And it's just the way I feel it should be.
Right. Okay. And so that was the main...
Yeah, the civilian world is different. I mean,
yeah,
you get... In the military, if you mouth off somebody, you get Article 15, which you lose money, lose stripe, you get restriction to barracks or restrict extra duty. In the civilian world, you lose your job. Or you get slapped on the wrist, and it wasn't like that.
Right. Yeah. So quite different then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you don't mind, you said you met your wife in Germany.
Yeah.
How was the military and family life balance? Because I know sometimes that can be...
It was a little different at first because her English wasn't very good and my German was terrible.
Right.
So,
did you eventually pick up any German language there?
By the time I left Germany, I was speaking fluent, read and write fluently. She has sisters and 2 brothers.
Oh, all right.
We're no longer married now, but we have 2 kids. I got a son that's 26 and a daughter's 30.
Okay.
We got 4 grandkids. But it was a little adjustment for her coming to the state, her first time leaving her home country and coming to the United States. So
right.
It was quite a bit of an adjustment for her.
Okay.
A lot of homesickness.
I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine. Did you feel that way when you were in Germany and Iraq, like a little homesickness like from the States, or because you were on the military base with other Americans, was it a bit easier for
you? I miss my family more than anything. I wouldn't consider it homesickness. I would just consider miss my kid,
the people,
my daughter, and my wife.
Okay. All right. Was there anything, because I've traveled around a bit, and sometimes it's like, you know, the food. Like, you just want a good cheeseburger. Did you ever have that feeling when you're in, you know what I mean? Like, little things.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
They had
some Kansas City barbecue.
I did a lot of convoys over there, and we go into these little Saudi truck stops, and they had this mystery meat. We don't know what it was, but we call them wolf burgers.
Okay.
And they were good.
Right.
But it was a mystery meat. We just didn't know what it was.
But and it tasted good, though.
Yeah.
All right.
And once in a while, my dad would vacuum seal snacks and stuff like that, send over. I love popcorn. My dad would send a big box of popcorn, and a box of popcorn would be a big summer sausage and a box of popcorn.
There you go. And, but that was while you were in Germany or Iraq?
That's when I was over in the Middle East and Saudi Arabia and Iraq.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, when we got there, we had just cold rations, MREs we ate out of.
Okay,
until
right.
We got a kitchen set up, then we got one hot meal a day, then you had MREs for the other meals.
Okay.
Usually your hot meal was either breakfast or dinner.
Okay. Okay.
But it was interesting. I got to see Bob Hope's last USO show. He came to Saudi Arabia and did a USO show for Christmas.
Okay. How was that?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Seeing a legend like that. And hearing my dad talk about that, my dad got to see Bob Hope, but he was in Korea.
Okay.
In 1958.
He was stationed there, yeah.
And then got to experience what my dad experienced. And it ended up being Bob Hope's last USO show.
Right. Did he use any of the same jokes that were similar?
Oh, yeah.
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 It's classic just lines.
Classic lines, classic standards. He had Steve Martin was with him. Robin Williams came over, and they were with him over there, so I got to see them too.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Expensive. Which one was your favorite of the three there? Bob Hope, Steve Martin.
Just liked them all.
Yeah, it was an awesome show.
Yeah. Because they were there for the troops.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Let's see. Do you have any like regrets? You said you would do it again. So I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I miss the camaraderie and the intensity.
Mm-hmm.
I just miss it. I just miss doing what I did.
Yeah. Yeah. After you got out, did you try to, find that feeling again, but so with something else, like in civilian?
Tried, but it's hard because everybody wants to do things their own way.
Right.
You have an 8-to-5 job. Military is not an 8-to-5 job. I mean, you work 12, 18, 24-hour shifts,
right,
or just continuous.
Mm-hmm.
You get off whenever you get off.
Right.
That was hard to adjust because I get off work, didn't know what to do with myself.
Right. All that free time, I guess. Yeah. All that free time. What did you do for R&R when you were in either Iraq or even back in the States or stationed? What was
some downtime. We slept a lot because worked long hours or guard duty. We have different companies from the United States send stuff over, like volleyball equipment, horseshoes, and stuff like that.
Okay.
So we made up our own entertainment. We play volleyball, play lots of spades, a lot of poker.
Okay.
Just trying to find something to keep occupying, stay out of trouble.
Right.
Keep the boredom down.
Right, yes, I can imagine.
We got over there, they don't do it now because of the way things are now with mail and stuff. But over there, we started getting letters in the mail, and they would hand them out on the chat lines. It was called to any serviceman letters. People just write letters and write to any serviceman in Saudi Arabia, and they'd be sent to the States, and they just hand them out to the soldiers as going through the chow line. And I still have every one of mine I got in a footlocker at home.
Okay.
And I wrote back when I could, and I corresponded with some of them.
Okay.
And I got some that were from schools in New York. I got some that was from this little lady in California. We wrote back and forth quite a bit. She's no longer living. She was probably in her 80s at the time, and she sent me snacks and cookies and just all kinds of stuff. And she had asked about my family and stuff like that, and she asked if she can call my family at Christmas, and I gave her my phone number, and she called my wife and daughter at Christmas. My wife didn't know who she was at
right,
all.
Yeah.
I told her to be expecting a phone call, and she kept her promise and called my wife and daughter on Christmas.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. What was the content of, like, a correspondence with, like, what you would receive?
How are you doing? What's going on?
Right.
What's weather like?
Yeah.
Is it hot over there?
Yeah.
Can you speak the language? Or
right. Kind of just open-ended.
Yeah.
Because it was addressed to one specific person.
Yeah. Just to any service member. And just hand letters out. Then if you just chose, you wrote back. If you didn't, you didn't. But it was interesting. It helped break the monotony and the boredom.
Right.
Because you would get four or five letters at a time sometimes, and if you chose to write back, and if they wrote back, that was great.
Yeah.
And I have all every one of my letters still I got from Saudi Arabia from them letters I have in a footlocker at home.
Okay. Excellent. Do you do any of that, like, correspondence now? Like, would you do you write to any like, military men?
I've had some family members that were overseas and served, and I correspond back and forth with them.
Okay.
All right. I had a nephew that served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I had a cousin that served in Bosnia and Iraq, Afghanistan.
Okay. All right. That's good. Let's see. What is I guess any words of wisdoms you'd like future generations to know? Anything you'd like to kind of pass along or just...
Just serve this country. Mm-hmm. Defend this country. It's the best country in the world. I mean, you've got your freedoms here. People take it for granted. It's a privilege to live here and to have what you have. It's not a right. It's a privilege. You earn that privilege. People think it's a right that they have live here, but people died for this country. So you have the privileges that you have, the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech. People died for that. Soldiers died, gave their lives for this country. And I would still, to this day, give my life for this country without a second thought.
Thank you very much. Is there anything else you'd like to, anything else you could think of? Any fun memories or experiences?
No,
or?
I've heard about this before. I've been wanting to do this, and it's kind of gets shuffled back in things I want to do.
And
had a chance to do it today.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it a lot. Yeah. Thank you very much.